HQN Books and Harper Audio present Beach House Summer by Sarah Morgan, performed by Regina Regan. Chapter 1. Ashley. She slid into his car, hoping this wasn't a mistake. It hadn't been her first choice of plan, but the others had failed, and she was desperate. He smiled at her, and there was so much charm in that smile that she forgot everything around her. The way he looked at her made her feel as if she was the only woman in the world. To add to the charm, he had the car, a high-performance convertible, low, sleek, and expensive. It shrieked, "Look at me," in case the other trappings of wealth and power hadn't already drawn your attention. Her mother would have warned her not to get in the car with him, but her mother was gone now, and Ashley was making the best decision she could with no one close to offer her advice or caution. She remembered the first time she'd ridden a bike on her own, unsteady, unbalanced, hands sweating on the handlebars, her mother shouting, "Keep pedaling!" She remembered her first swimming lesson, where she'd slid under the surface and gulped down so much water she thought she was going to empty the pool. She'd been sure she was going to drown, but then she felt hands lifting her to the surface and a voice cutting through water-clogged ears, "Keep kicking!" She was on her own now. There was no one to tug her to the surface if she was drowning. No one to steady the wheels of her bike when she wobbled. Her mother had been the safety net in her life, and they'd grown even closer after her father died. But now, if she fell, she'd hit the ground with nothing and no one to cushion her fall. He turned onto Mulholland Drive and picked up speed. The engine gave a throaty roar, and the wind played with her hair as they sped upward through the Hollywood Hills. She'd never been in a car like this before. Never met a man like him. They climbed higher and higher, passing luxury mansions, catching glimpses of a lifestyle beyond the reach of even her imagination. Envy slid through her. Did problems go away when you had so much? Did the people living here experience the same anxieties as normal people? Or did those high walls and security cameras insulate them from life? Could you buy happiness? No, but money could make life easier, which was why she was here. Spread beneath them were views of downtown, Hollywood, and the San Fernando Valley. Stay focused. "I know the best place to see the sunset." His warm, deep voice had helped propel him from yet another TV personality to a megastar. "You're never gonna forget it." She was sure of it. This moment was significant for so many reasons. What would happen to that confidence when she told him her news? Nausea rolled in her stomach, and she was relieved she'd been unable to eat breakfast or lunch. "You're quiet." He drove with one hand on the wheel, supremely confident. One hand, his eyes mostly on her. She wanted to tell him to keep his attention on the road.
"I'm a little nervous."
"Are you intimidated? Don't be. I'm just a normal, regular guy." "Yeah, right." He was driving fast now, enjoying the car, the moment, his life. She knew that was about to change. She'd rehearsed a speech, practiced 100 times in front of the mirror.
"I've got something to tell you."
"Could you slow down?"
"Oh, you prefer slow?" His hand caressed the wheel. "I can go slow when I need to.
What did you say your name was?"
He didn't recognize her. He didn't have a clue who she was. How could he not know? She sat rigid in her seat. Was she really that forgettable and unimportant? In this part of town, where everyone was someone, she was no one. She fought the disillusion and the humiliation.
"I'm Mandy. I'm from Connecticut."
Her name wasn't Mandy. She'd never been to Connecticut. Couldn't even put it on a map.
He should know that. She wanted him to know that. She wanted him to say, "I know you're not Mandy." But he didn't, of course, because women came and went from his life, and he was already moving on to the next one.
And you're sure we've met before? I wouldn't have forgotten someone as pretty as you.
She had dreams about him, fantasies. She'd thought about him day and night for the past couple of months, ever since she'd first laid eyes on him. But he didn't know her. There was no recognition. Her eyes stung. She told herself it was the wind in her face because her mother had drummed into her that life was too short to cry over a man. She wouldn't be here at all, except that she felt alone and scared and needed to do something to help herself. She was afraid she couldn't do this on her own, and he had to take some responsibility, surely. He shouldn't be allowed to just walk away. That wasn't right. Like it or not, they were bonded.
We've met. She rested her hand on her abdomen, blinked away the tears. The time to wish she'd been more careful was long gone. She had to look forward, had to do the right thing, but it wasn't easy. Her body told her that she was an adult, but inside, she felt like the child who had wobbled on that bike with her ponytail flying. He glanced at her again, curious.
Now I think about it, you do look familiar. Can't place you, though. Don't be offended. He gave her another flash of those perfect white teeth. I meet a lot of women.
She knew that. She knew his reputation, and yet still she was here. What did that say about her? She should have more pride, but pride and desperation didn't fit comfortably together.
I'm not offended.
Under the fear, she was furious and fiercely determined. She wasn't going to let this guy ruin her life. That wasn't going to happen. They were climbing now, climbing, climbing, the road winding upward into the hills, while the city lay beneath them like a glittering carpet. She felt like Peter Pan, flying over rooftops. Should she tell him now? Was this a good moment? Her heart started to pound, heavy beats thudding a warning against her ribs. She hadn't thought he'd bring her somewhere this remote. She shouldn't have climbed into his car. Another bad decision to add to the one she'd already made. The longer she waited to tell him, the farther they were from civilization and people. People who could help her. But who would help her? Who was there? She had no one. Just herself. Which was why she was here now, doing what needed to be done, regardless of the consequences. Thinking of consequences made her palms grow damp. She should do it right now, while half his attention was on the road. She waited as he waltzed the car around another bend and hit another straight stretch of road. She could already see the next bend up ahead.
Mr. Whitman, Cliff, there's something I need to tell you.
Chapter 2. Joanna. Joanna Whitman learned of her ex-husband's death while she was eating breakfast. She was on her second cup of strong espresso when his face popped up on her TV screen. She grabbed the remote, intending to do what she always did these days when he appeared in her life, turn him off. When she realized that behind that standard head and shoulders shot wasn't a sea of adoring fans, or one of his exclusive restaurants, but the mangled wreckage of a car in a ravine. She saw the words "breaking news" appear on the screen and turned up the sound in time to hear the newsreader telling the world that celebrity chef Cliff Whitman had been killed in an accident and that they would be giving more information as they had it. Currently, all they knew was that his car had gone off the road. He'd been pronounced dead at the scene. His passenger, a young woman, as yet unnamed, had been flown to the hospital, her condition unknown. A young woman. Joanna tightened her fingers on the remote. Of course she'd be young. Cliff had a pattern, and that pattern hadn't changed as he aged. He was the most competitive person she'd ever met, driven by an insecurity that went bone deep. He wanted the highest TV ratings, the biggest crowds for public appearances, the longest waiting lists for his restaurants. When it came to women, he wanted them younger and thinner, choosing them as carefully as he chose the ingredients he used in his kitchens,
fresh and seasonal. On most days, Joanna felt like someone passed her sell-by date. She was 40. Were you supposed to feel like this at 40? She'd wasted half her life on a man who had repeatedly let her down. She stared at the TV, her gaze fixed on the smoking wreckage. Hadn't she always said his libido would be the death of him? Her phone rang, and she checked the screen. Not a friend. Did she have any true friends? It was something she had often wondered. But Rita, Cliff's personal assistant, and his lover for the past 6 months. Joanna didn't want to talk to Rita. She didn't want to talk to anyone. She knew from painful experience that anything she said would find its way into the media and be used to construct an image of her as a pathetic creature worthy of pity. Whatever Cliff did, she somehow became the story. And no matter how much she told herself that it didn't matter because they didn't matter, and that the woman they wrote about wasn't really her, she still found it distressing. Not only the intrusion and the inaccuracies, and there were many of those, but the constant reminder of her biggest mistake, not leaving him sooner. She stayed ridiculously loyal to him for 2 decades, and yes, she regretted it now. He'd made her extravagant promises and told her she was the best thing in his life and that this time things were going to be different. And, naively, she'd believed him. And she hadn't done it just once. She'd done it repeatedly. She'd thought, this time he means it, and things will be different. But things never were different, and he hadn't meant it. And now she felt stupid for believing he'd ever change, and that the things he'd said would ever be anything other than empty words spoken to induce her to stay. But she'd so badly wanted to believe him, because the alternative was to accept that under the charm and the warmth, Cliff Whitman was a cheat and a liar, and that she'd stayed with him far too long. She'd finally left him, but the news stories never went away, which meant that even though she'd finally divorced him, she still sometimes felt as if they were together. Her mistake was an anchor that held her fast. Whatever she did in the future, she'd be dragging her past with Cliff along with her. She rejected the call, muted the sound on the TV, but continued to stare at the words scrolling along the bottom of the screen. Celebrity chef Cliff Whitman killed in car accident. Dead at the scene. Well, damn. She'd spent the last year wanting to kill him herself, and she didn't know whether to feel elated or cheated. After everything he'd done, everything he'd put her through, it seemed unfair of the universe to have her deprived of her chance to play at least a small part in his demise. A hysterical laugh burst from her, and she slapped her hand over her mouth, shocked. Had she really just thought that? She was a compassionate human being. She valued kindness above almost all other qualities, possibly because her encounters with it had been rare. And yet here she was, thinking that if she'd seen his car hovering on the edge of a ravine, she might have given it a hard push. What did that say about her? Her legs were shaking. Why were her legs shaking? She sat down hard on the nearest chair. Dead. Her journey with Cliff had been bumpy, but she'd known him for half her life. She should be sad, shouldn't she? She should feel something. Yes, Cliff Whitman was a liar and a cheat who'd almost broken her, but he was still a person. And there had been a time when they'd loved each other, even if that love had been complicated. There had been good parts. At the beginning of their marriage, he'd brought her breakfast in bed on Sunday mornings, flaky, buttery croissants he'd baked himself, and juice freshly squeezed from the citrus fruit that grew in their home orchard. He'd listened to her. He'd made her laugh. She'd organized his chaotic life, leaving him free to play the part he enjoyed most, being Cliff. He said they were the perfect team. She stood up abruptly and fetched a glass of ice water. She drank it quickly, trying to cool the hot burn of emotion. Whatever had happened between them, death was always a tragedy. Was it? Was she being hypocritical? She should probably cry, if not for him, then for the woman who'd made the bad decision to get into the car with him. Joanna sympathized. She was never one to judge the bad decisions of another. She'd made so many bad decisions in her life, she could no longer count them. She thought about Rita. Would she be shocked to discover she hadn't been the only woman in Cliff's life? Why was it that a woman so rarely believed that a serial cheater would cheat on them? They all thought they were different, that they were special, that they would be the one to tame him. When he said, "You're the one," they believed him. Joanna had believed that too. She'd needed to believe that. When she'd met him, she'd been vulnerable and heartbroken. She wanted so badly to be special to someone, to have someone whose love she could rely on. She thought love meant security, and it had taken a long time, too long, for her to understand that they were different things. Putting the empty glass down, she took a deep breath and forced herself to think. She and Cliff were no longer married, but they still shared the business. Cliff's was a brand, but now the figurehead was gone. What did that mean for the company they'd built together? She had invested more than 20 years of her life into its growth and success, which was why she hadn't walked away from it at the same time as her marriage. It had represented the only consistency and security she had left. Also, Cliff's gave her a focus, and she needed that. The media didn't understand, of course. They didn't understand how she could still work alongside a man who had repeatedly humiliated her. She closed her eyes. Forget that. Don't think about that. Right now, the worst part was that there would be a funeral, and she hated funerals. No matter whose funeral it was always her father's funeral. Again and again, like some kind of cruel time travel trick. And she was always 10 years old, shivering as the cool California rain blended with her tears. This was different, of course. She'd adored her father, and her father had adored her back. He was the only man whose love she'd been sure of. But even with him, love hadn't meant security, because he'd left her, felled by a heart attack in the middle of the living room with her as a witness. She could still hear the sickening thud as his body had hit the floor. And now there would be Cliff's funeral. Did she have to go? The thought of it made her want to reach for a drink, even though she wasn't much of a drinker. Yes, she had to go. Divorce or no divorce, it was the respectful thing to do. People would be watching. Everyone would want to know how she felt. Not that she would tell them. She never spoke to the press. How did she feel? She heard sounds in the distance, and then the insistent buzz of her gate intercom. Without thinking, she stepped to the window and looked down the sweep of the drive to the large iron gates that protected her from the outside world. A camera flashed, and she gasped and quickly closed the shutters. No! Unlike Cliff, she'd never sought fame or celebrity, but she'd been caught in his spotlight anyway. It was one of the reasons she'd moved to a different neighborhood after the divorce. She'd hoped to be able to slide away from the dazzling beam of attention that always landed on him. She'd chosen to live in a small, discreet community, rather than up among the flashy mansions in Bel Air, where Cliff entertained lavishly on his verdant terrace with views of mountains and ocean. They'd found her, of course, because the media could find anyone. But she'd hoped that by living a quiet, low-key, non-newsworthy, cliff-free life, she'd become less interesting to them. She'd been wrong. They continued to write about her, exposing all her secrets for the public to enjoy. They knew about her father's death. They knew she was estranged from her stepmother, Denise. They'd tracked her down, and predictably, Denise had been only too happy to voice her opinion. She's no daughter of mine. Always was a difficult child. Her phone rang, dragging her back from a downward spiral into the past. This time it was her assistant, Nessa. Joanna answered it, grateful for the distraction. Hi. Can you let me in, boss? I'm outside the garden room. I used the back entrance.
I don't have a back entrance.
I took a secret route.
Joanna walked to the back of the house, mystified and alarmed. She'd chosen the house because it was secure. When she'd first viewed it, instead of admiring kitchen appliances and ceiling height, she'd been checking areas of vulnerability. The dense woodland at the back had been a plus. This was an unfashionable area. There was no road and no running trails. Her property was protected by a high wall and tall, mature trees that concealed the back of the house from view. It had been a carefully considered purchase, but when she walked through the door, she never once thought, "I love this house," or even, "I'm home." She didn't think of it as home. Home was a place where you felt safe and could relax. Neither of those things could happen when you were an object of public interest. She walked through the garden room and saw Nessa standing on her deck, glancing furtively over her shoulder. Normally impeccably groomed, she had twigs stuck in her hair, and her shoes were muddied and scuffed. Shaken by the discovery that her home wasn't as secure as she'd thought, Joanna opened the door, and Nessa virtually fell inside. "What is wrong with people? I tried coming in the conventional way, actually through the front door, you know, like a normal person. But there are a million people with cameras and two TV vans, which, frankly, I don't get, because why are you news? You're not the one who was trying to have sex in a moving vehicle. Hey, I'm all for multitasking, but it depends on the task, doesn't it? Sex and driving, call me boring, but those two things do not go together."
"Nessa, breathe."
"So, I've been thinking about this." Nessa shrugged off her backpack and towed off her shoes. "I've ruined my shoes, by the way. I was thinking maybe we can charge them to Cliff, as this was all his fault. Do you have any antiseptic? I scratched myself coming through the woods. I don't want to die of some vile disease because you need me right now."
Joanna's head was spinning. "You came through the woods at the back of the house?"
"Yes. I remember you telling me the woods were one of your reasons for picking this place. They can't get to you from the back, only from the front. That's what you said. You only have to watch one direction." "So I thought, right, I'll get to her from the back. But it's not pedestrian friendly. Do I have mud on my cheek? I bet I do."
She scrubbed randomly at her face and then adjusted her glasses, which had settled at a strange angle on her nose.
"I am not cut out for wilderness adventures. Give me California sunshine and beaches and I'm there. But a dark forest full of insects, snakes, bears, and coyotes? Now that's me out. Can you check me for spiders?"
She spun and showed her back to Joanna, who dutifully checked.
"You're spider-free. But even if you made it through the woods, how did you get over the wall?" "I climbed. Don't ask for details."
Nessa tugged at a twig that was tangled in her curls.
"I grew up with three brothers. I have skills that would make your eyes pop. And don't worry, no one followed me. No one is that stupid. Also, there were no humans in that woods, at least no live ones. Willing to bet there are a few dead ones, though. Bodies undiscovered." She grinned. "Spooky."
"Nessa," Jessa brushed a leaf from Nessa's shoulder, "what are you doing here?"
"I'm your assistant, and I figured you'd need assistance."
I'm not really thinking about work right now."
"Of course you're not. I'm here for more than work. I'm your right-hand woman, the dragon at your gate."
Nessa polished a smudge from her glasses.
"When you employed me, you said that I had to be here for you both in calm and crisis. So, here I am. I assume this is the crisis part. We're in this together. Bring it on."
Together. Joanna felt a pressure in her chest. Someone had thought of her. Someone wanted to help her. Yes, she paid Nessa, but she was going to ignore that part.
"You don't want to be exposed to this circus."
Nessa tilted her head.
"You are.
I have no choice. You do.
And I choose being here with you, so that's decided."
The strange feeling in her chest spread to her throat. People generally distanced themselves from her, afraid of being tainted by association. They didn't want to find themselves in that spotlight.
"Have you really thought this through?" "What is there to think through? We're a team. In my interview, you said that I'd need to be versatile. I hope you'll remember the whole climbing the wall thing when you give me a reference. Not that I'm planning on leaving you anytime soon, because this is my dream job, and you're an inspirational boss. Now, what can I do? We can make a statement."
"I never make a statement. I never say anything." Well, in that case, I can call the cops and get them to move that mob with cameras at the end of your drive. Joanna looked at her assistant's flushed, earnest face and suddenly didn't feel quite so alone. She wasn't alone. She had Nessa. Hiring Nessa as her assistant 2 years earlier had been one of the better decisions she'd made in her life. Her team had lined up a selection of experienced candidates for her to interview, but then Nessa had bounced into the room, fresh out of college, vibrating with energy and enthusiasm and popping with ideas. Ignoring the disapproval of her colleagues, Joanna had given her the job and had never regretted that decision. Nessa had proved herself to be discreet, reliable, and sharp as the business end of a razor blade. Not all my decisions are bad, Joanna thought, as she locked the back door. I'm glad you're here, but I don't want you to do anything about the cameras. Leave them. Nothing? Nessa gaped at her, then looked guilty. I'm so thoughtless. Here I am worrying about spiders and press statements, and you've just lost the man you were married to for 2 decades. I know you were divorced, and that he wasn't exactly... Her voice trailed off as she studied Joanna's face. I mean, 20 years is a long time, even if he was a... She gave a helpless shrug. Give me some clues here. I want to say the right thing, but I don't know what that is. How do you feel? Are you sad or mad? Do I get you tissues or a punching bag? I don't know how I feel. Joanna decided not to mention her less than charitable thoughts. I feel strange. Yeah, well, strange about covers it. Can I grab a glass of water? Turns out covert operations in dense woodland is thirsty work. Then I'll brush my hair, work magic with makeup so that I don't look like I'm dressed for Halloween, and get to work. Go through to the kitchen. Help yourself. I'll join you in a minute. Joanna went through the whole of the ground floor at the front of the house, making sure all the blinds were closed before returning to the kitchen. They could stay there with their cameras, but she'd give them nothing to photograph. And if someone was brazen enough to breach her gates, they wouldn't be rewarded for it. Nessa had settled herself at the kitchen island. She had a glass of water in one hand and her phone in the other. She was scrolling through social media. We're trending, no surprise there. Interesting hashtags, lots of speculation about what they were doing when the car went off the road. She sent Joanna a sideways glance. Sorry, this is awkward. No, it's fine. Some people are saying it's a shame because it was his recipe for citrus salmon that made them realize good food wasn't just for restaurants. He created that recipe for me. Joanna thought. He was trying to teach me to cook. I ruined the salmon, and he laughed at me and said some people couldn't be taught. That was the day she'd given up cooking. Others are saying he was a sleaze, good riddance, yada yada. Nessa continued scrolling. They've managed to get a comment from 2 of the women he... What? No way. She stared at the screen. What? You don't want to know. If you want my advice, delete all your personal social media accounts. I don't have social media accounts. Good decision. Nessa carried on scrolling, her expression alternating between disgust and surprise. Joanna sighed. That bad? Nessa hesitated. There are a few decent people out there. People saying a death is always sad. Some of the comments are pretty neutral. Some wondering who the woman was. She sneaked a look at Joanna. I don't know. Of course you don't. Why would you? You're divorced from him. Whoever she is, I bet she's wishing right now she got into a car with a different guy. I mean, we've all had bad dates, but that... Nessa shrugged, took a gulp of water, and continued scrolling. Some people are wondering if this will mean the end of the business. Will it? She glanced up. The business is called Cliff's, and Chef Cliff is... She stopped. Joanna sat down opposite her. Dead. You can say it. And Nessa was right. It would affect the business they'd built together. She'd given up on their marriage, but she hadn't given up on that. She'd spent the past 20 years nurturing it, watching it grow. It was her baby. She'd felt a pang, thinking of the actual baby she'd lost. One minute, she'd been 11 weeks pregnant, excited about her future as a mother. The next, she'd been sitting in the bathroom, sobbing. Her son. She'd buried that pain deep, but that didn't mean it had gone away. Sometimes she'd wake up and think, my boy would be 10 years old today. And she'd imagine the gifts she would have bought, and the adventures they would have had together, and how much she would have loved him. Would her priorities have been different if she'd had a child? Her marriage? Her phone rang again, and Nessa glanced at her. Do you want me to answer that? No. It might be a friend. If she said, I don't have any real friends, Nessa would feel sorry for her, and Joanna didn't want anyone feeling sorry for her. She wanted to protect the fragile strands of her pride. If it is, then I'll call them back. Of all the bad things about being married to Cliff, and there had been many, the media attention had been among the worst. Cliff himself had been emotionally bulletproof. Whatever they'd accused him of, he'd laugh, wink, give them a no comment, or a let's focus on what happens in my kitchen, not my bedroom. For some reason, Joanna had never understood. His bad behavior had increased his appeal. He was shocking, but supremely watchable. His TV ratings rose, no matter what he did. He was unapologetic about his colorful personal life, so sure that his charm would ultimately guarantee him forgiveness for all his misdeeds, that it was impossible to shame or embarrass him. Oh, how she loathed being the subject of attention and gossip. Cliff hadn't understood her aversion. He'd hungered for the limelight, and not only because it was essential to building his brand. If attention was a large pie, he would have greedily devoured the whole thing without offering her a sliver. But perhaps precisely because she wasn't interested, the media chose to focus on her. How did she feel about his latest affair? Why didn't she leave? Had she no self-respect? She became a case study in humiliation, although she'd never understood why the shame should be hers when he was the one who was cheating. They photographed her from every angle, commented on the weight she'd lost, how haggard she looked, their speculation cruel and deeply personal. If he cheats, it must be her fault. They'd speculated on whether, in marrying a man 14 years her senior, she'd somehow been trying to replace her father. That suggestion had offended her more than any of them. Cliff was nothing like her father. Hearing the two of them mentioned in the same breath had made her want to lash out. Why did they hate her so much? It was a question she'd often pondered, and the only explanation that made sense was that they envied her. They envied her going to bed with Cliff, waking up next to Cliff, wearing his ring on her finger. And the only way to handle that envy was to convince themselves that she was having a miserable life. They might have felt better had they known that most of the time, she was. The buzzer rang again, and Nessa sent an angry look in the direction of the door. They're like hyenas, ready to chomp down on a carcass. Yes. Given that she was the carcass, the analogy wasn't comfortable. The stuff they say about you is all total crap. Aren't you even tempted to give your side of things? What would be the point? He said, she said. They don't want the truth. Surprising they don't get bored, as you never give them a response. I guess they need to milk the story, and they hope that if they're persistent, you might eventually say something. Cliff's dead, so he's not going to be saying anything. The girl's in the hospital. That leaves you. Yeah, they'll want your reaction. What was her reaction? What did she feel? Dead. She said the word aloud again, trying to make it real, testing herself, pressing to see if it hurt. Nessa eyed her. Can I pour you a drink? A real drink? No, thank you. Her thoughts were complicated enough without clouding them with alcohol. Untangling her emotions was complicated. Was she feeling humiliated? Cliff's behavior had continually embarrassed her, even after they were divorced. Was she prostrate with grief? Angry at the impact his actions might have on the business and the people they employed? Joanna finished her coffee. It was cold, but she didn't care. She felt oddly detached. She felt grief, yes, but was it grief for Cliff? Or grief for the life she'd wanted that had never turned out the way she'd hoped. She wasn't sure what she felt. It couldn't be relief, because that would make her hard-hearted. Would it? or would it make her human? The buzzer sounded again, annoying, persistent. Nessa slid off the stool and refilled her glass.
I'll tell people in the office you won't be in for a few days. Give it time to calm down. They'll soon move on to something or someone else.
She added ice to the glass, splashing droplets of water onto smooth Italian tiles.
Anyway, unless you're going to wear a disguise and shimmy over the wall like I did, your only way out of this place is through the front entrance. You can drive over the photographers, but then you'll be arrested, and I don't have enough money in my account to bail you out. I suppose they'll go away eventually.
They won't go away. She knew how this worked. There would be endless gossip. In the past, she'd even been the subject of a woman's daytime chat show. Successful women who stay with men who cheat. Joanna had watched it, appalled, but also fascinated by this external analysis of her life. Was that really who they thought she was? Apparently, she was a doormat, a coward, a disgrace to women. Where was her strength, her dignity? To them, she wasn't a person. She was a story. She was ratings, sales, a commercial opportunity, a talking point. They weren't interested in the truth. They didn't know anything about her relationship. They didn't know anything about her life before she'd met Cliff. They weren't interested in who she was or what she felt. They didn't know that although Cliff was the face of the business, it was her hard work that had made him famous. There was a popular TV show, a chain of expensive restaurants, branded cookware, cookbooks. The franchise had grown like a monster. Please, Joanna, I can't do this without you. He was the face of the company, but she was the engine. She kept everything going, and he knew it. He'd known it, she reminded herself. It was all in the past now. There was no more Cliff.
Why did you crash, Cliff? Were you driving too fast?
Nessa put a glass of water in front of her.
It's a crappy situation, boss. No doubt about that. But, as my mom always says, no matter how bad things get, there's always someone worse off than you. I hate it when she says that. Seriously annoying, actually, but I have to admit that mostly she's right. Although it's true that, right now, I wouldn't want to be you.
Thank you, Nessa.
Do you know who I definitely wouldn't want to be?
She pushed her glasses up her nose and gave Joanna a meaningful look. That girl in the car. Don't know who she is or what she was doing, but I would not want her life. The girl in the car. Joanna didn't know who she was or what she'd been doing either. The one thing she did know was that even though he was dead, Cliff Whitman had still managed to ruin her day. Chapter 3. Ashley. Ashley lay in the hospital bed, listening to the beep of machines. There wasn't a single part of her that didn't ache. She felt as if someone had pushed a knife into her side. Her head was foggy, but her brain was clear. She remembered everything. She wished she didn't.
You're awake. That's good.
A woman wearing a white coat stepped closer.
I'm Dr. Ramirez. How are you feeling?
Like roadkill, which was almost how she'd ended up. She was reliving it over and over again. The flashbacks were almost as scary as the real thing. She tried to speak, but her mouth was dry, and a nurse stepped forward and gave her a sip of water.
You were in an accident.
The doctor spoke carefully.
You were a passenger. Your car went off the road. Do you remember what happened?
A weightless moment of horror. A scream. Hers? His? Rolling, not knowing which way was up. An explosion of pain. I'm going to die here. We're both going to die here. They couldn't find out the truth, could they? They couldn't know what she'd said to Cliff in the moments before he crashed. Now he was dead. She just wanted the whole thing to go away. She wanted to forget she ever came here, forget she ever climbed into his car.
Ashley, do you remember anything at all?
No.
She remembered making a bad decision, a series of bad decisions. Her mother had raised her not to lie, but all her instincts told her that this was one of those occasions when the truth was best withheld, at least until she'd had the time to think things through. The way she felt, that moment might not be coming quickly.
My side hurts.
Ashley tuned out as the doctor listed her injuries. There were lots of them, and that wasn't counting the stuff they couldn't see. She felt a flash of anxiety. Would it be okay? Would everything be okay?
I hurt everywhere.
We can increase your pain relief, as well as your more serious injuries. You have a cracked rib and severe bruising. We'll be watching you carefully over the next few days. You're lucky to be alive. The doctor hesitated. Is there someone we can contact? Family? Friends? We didn't find any emergency contact details when you were brought in.
No emergency contact. That said everything about her life, didn't it? There was no one she could call.
She was alone in the world, apart from the medical team who were paid to care for her. She felt an emptiness, and then a flash of panic.
Keep pedaling, Ashley. Keep kicking.
She had to figure out what to do next, but her brain was blurred by pain and the remnants of anesthetic. She didn't want to be here, but what choice did she have? She couldn't even sit up without help. And even if she could, where would she go? She hadn't anticipated this outcome. She didn't have any sort of backup plan, not even a bad one. The doctor exchanged glances with the nurse.
The man you were with, Cliff.
There was no reason to pretend she didn't know his name.
He's dead, I know.
She knew he was dead, and yet the memory uppermost in her mind wasn't the crash, but the look in his eyes in that split second before he'd lost control. Shock, disbelief, anger. She shivered. It hadn't gone the way she'd expected it would. None of it had. Even if he'd lived, the outcome would have been bad. The doctor frowned.
You know he's dead.
I thought you didn't remember. Ashley gestured to the TV screen, visible in the waiting area beyond the glass windows of the ward. There was no sound, but the rolling news at the bottom confirmed that celebrity chef Cliff Whitman had been killed in an accident on Mulholland Drive. An unknown woman had been removed from the wreckage and taken to the hospital. That was her. She was the unknown woman. The irony didn't escape her. Despite their history, she'd been unknown to Cliff, too. Right now, she was relieved to be unknown, and she wanted to stay that way. She wanted to wind the clock back, slide back into her old life, and somehow forget this horrible mistake. Another image flashed up on the screen. A slim woman wearing jeans and a simple white shirt, holding her hand up to ward off photographers. Her sunglasses were so huge, they obscured most of her face. She looked haunted, hunted. Joanna Whitman. Ashley's stomach rebelled.
I'm gonna be sick.
The nurse handed her a bowl and she retched miserably, even though there was nothing in her stomach.
I'm sorry. Was she a bad person?
She didn't dare ask herself that question. Close the blinds and turn that TV off. The doctor scowled at the flustered nurse, and Ashley lay still, exhausted. She could have told them not to bother, because the news images weren't showing her anything she hadn't already seen up close. When the car had eventually stopped rolling, she'd registered two things. Firstly, that somehow she was still alive, and all her limbs appeared to still be attached to her body. Secondly, that Cliff Whitman hadn't been so lucky. She'd never seen a dead body before, but she hadn't been in any doubt that she was looking at one. And it was all her fault. Would the outcome have been different if she'd picked another moment to tell him what she'd needed to tell him? She could still hear his voice saying, "That is impossible." And she remembered her high-pitched reply, "If you have sex, then it's always a possibility." In that moment, she'd had his full attention, which was why he'd driven off the road. Did that make her a murderer?
You are in deep trouble, Ashley.
She wanted to run, but she couldn't even sit up, let alone move from the bed. The doctor adjusted the drip running into her arm.
Do you remember anything at all? I remember climbing into his car.
She could imagine what they thought of her, what was going through their heads. But whatever they were imagining, the truth was probably far juicier. She felt hot and then cold. She thought about Joanna Whitman and squirmed. The woman had looked awful.
When you're feeling strong enough, the police want to talk to you. They want to know if you have an idea what might have caused the accident. It wasn't raining. Visibility was good.
I don't know. I don't remember much. One minute we were driving, and the next we were flying over the edge.
She didn't want to talk to the police. She didn't want questions. How much could they find out?
Could you be locked up for telling someone something they didn't want to hear?
She saw the nurse turn to look at the machine and hope they didn't have a lie detector rigged alongside all the other medical equipment.
The doctor gave a reassuring smile.
Try not to worry. Short-term amnesia isn't uncommon after an accident like yours. You were lucky. But you might as well settle in, because we won't be discharging you for a while. The good news is that the baby is fine.
Ashley stared at her.
Baby?
Yes, your baby. You're pregnant. Around 10 weeks.
Dr. Ramirez paused.
You didn't know?
Yes, she'd known. Of course she'd known. That was why she'd been in the car with Cliff. But she hadn't wanted anyone else to know. Not until she figured out what to do next.
Oh, Ashley. She was in even bigger trouble than she'd thought.
Chapter 4. Melanie.
Melanie Miller bit into a slice of toast to stop herself engaging with her daughter. There was a time when she might have let her temper fly, but that was before she'd had her own child and learned to hold it back. But she didn't pretend it was easy. It didn't help that she wasn't a morning person. If Greg hadn't pulled the covers off her that morning, she would have stayed asleep.
You never listen to me!
Eden stood, arms folded, a defiant look on her pretty face.
I'm not going to college, ever. What's the point?
Do not answer that. Mel took another bite of toast. This encounter was going to cost her an extra run on the beach to burn off the calories, but better that than an emotional collision with Eden that might take days to mend.
Mom, why aren't you saying anything? I'm tired of studying. It's a waste of life. And what does college give you anyway except massive debt? I don't want a career. I want to do something with art or photography, something creative that's fun and leaves me with loads of time to surf. And maybe I won't earn masses of money, but I want more from life than a paycheck. I want to stay true to my authentic self. I want to follow my dreams. I don't want to settle like you did.
Mel choked on her toast. Right now, her authentic self wanted to give her daughter a piece of her mind. She reminded herself that the world looked different when you were a teenager. You saw possibility, untainted by reality, a road with no obstacles, choices that were simple. I don't want to settle like you did. The words woke up a part of her she mostly ignored. She tried to put it to sleep again, reminding herself that there was more than one reason to do a job, and they were all valid. Some people went after the money, and there was nothing wrong with that. Some people wanted to do something worthwhile that would give them a sense of purpose. Mel had followed tradition and joined the family business. The surf cafe overlooked the beach and had been established by her grandparents as somewhere the local community could gather to eat and drink. These days, there were twice as many tourists as locals at any given time, but it was still a popular haunt for the inhabitants of Silver Point, almost all of whom Mel knew well. At least once a week when she was growing up, her parents had said, "This place will be yours and Nate's one day." Mel had occasionally thought, "But what if I don't want it?" She pushed that thought aside. The cafe was part of her life. She'd been helping out there since she could walk. In her time, she'd done it all, but now she handled the administrative side, which, if she was honest, wasn't particularly exciting. But the business was her family's pride and joy, and she and her twin brother, Nate, had a duty to keep the place going. Occasionally, when they were exceptionally busy, she helped out with the customers, but only when they were desperate. She didn't have Nate's charm and easygoing manner. She was too impatient. If she was left in charge, they probably would have gone out of business. She preferred managing the books. At least numbers didn't complain and tell you that you brought the wrong food
or that the hamburger wasn't quite cooked as they liked it, even though you delivered exactly what they'd ordered. The job gave her flexibility, which she was grateful for as a working parent, and she enjoyed working with her brother, although she wouldn't in a million years admit that to him. And the job came with other advantages. Mel couldn't make it through the week without indulging in at least one of Nate's pecan chocolate brownies. Eden was addicted to his white chocolate and macadamia cookies, and even Greg, who tried to avoid sugar, had been known to lose all willpower when confronted by a slice of apple pie and cinnamon tart. If you were feeling virtuous, there was always the bay shrimp salad, and if you had time to sit and savor the moment, then you could settle at one of the tables in the outdoor seating area, sheltered by cypress trees, and watch the Pacific crash onto the sweep of soft white sand. Eden was frowning at her. Mom!
Yes, I heard you.
She couldn't do this now. Reinforcements were called for.
Greg, coffee's ready.
I'm here. Greg strolled into the room, and Eden immediately shifted from combative to cheerful.
Hi, Dad.
Hi, yourself.
He greeted his daughter with a swift kiss on the top of her head, which Eden tolerated, as long as no one she knew was around to witness it.
How's my family this morning?
Tired, Mel thought, as she stood up and handed him the flask of coffee she'd made. Eden had been a feisty toddler, with firm opinions on everything from clothes to food. Mel had told herself that things would get easier when she was a teenager. She'd been wrong. Maybe she should stop fighting with her, stop trying to steer her decisions in a more sensible direction. At what point should you step back and let them live their lives, mistakes and all? The question nagged at her, and she was relieved when Eden and Greg departed, one to school and one to work. Mel wasn't needed in the cafe for a few hours, and she decided to use the time to find a book to replace the one she'd finished in the bath the night before. She grabbed her purse and her keys and headed out of the house. It was a 5-minute stroll to Main Street, and she lifted her face to the sun in an attempt to lower her stress levels. It was early, but already the streets were buzzing with summer visitors. Mel pushed open the door of the Beach Bookstore, and the bell clanged in that pleasing, familiar way that reminded her why she'd chosen to work in the family business and stay in her hometown of Silver Point, California. Silver Point, with its cobbled streets and glorious beaches, was a much-photographed section of the California coastline, to the annoyance of the police department, who were tired of people almost killing themselves while posing for the perfect selfie. The small oceanside town nestled between the Pacific Ocean and the Santa Lucia Mountains. In the peak summer months, people often drove right past it on their way to the tourist hotspots of Carmel and Monterey. That suited Mel. She loved her home, where mountains met the ocean, and would happily have kept it all to herself. This was her place, and she belonged here, with these people she'd known all her life. She ran on the numerous hiking trails that crisscrossed the mountains, through the forests of Monterey pine, cypress, and cedar trees. She surfed and swam in the ocean under skies so blue it seemed unreal. Still, Eden's words dug at her. It was like walking with a stone in her shoe. I don't want to settle like you did. She had a brief vision of high heels and city life, the busy buzz of crowded streets, and the glint of sunshine on glass skyscrapers. She hadn't settled. She absolutely hadn't settled. And it was because she loved this part of the California coastline that she could understand Eden's reluctance to leave it. But having fun wasn't a job. And if it was fun she wanted, why reject college? Mel had loved college. She'd had her first legal drink, smoked pot, and done a ton of things you were supposed to do when you were young. Danced until her feet hurt, talked until her jaw hurt, had lots of sex with Greg. Although, to be fair, she'd been doing that since she was 16, so that was more of the same. Although the same was good. And then she trained as a CPA and started work in the cafe using her business skills. And maybe that wasn't exactly fun, but it was a stable job, and that was something to be grateful for. Having fun didn't pay the rent. Having fun didn't guarantee you a secure future, and surely wanting that for her only child didn't make her a bad mother. Maybe instead of a novel, she should buy a book on parenting. Got anything on managing difficult teenagers? She peered over the counter where Mary Lou was retrieving books from a box. Mel! Mary Lou scrambled to her feet, red-faced from exertion. Eden again? If you feel the ground shake around here, folks assume it's an earthquake, but not in my house. At home, we call it an Edenquake. I had to call the police. That bad? Mary Lou grinned. And did the officer involved make an arrest? Fortunately, Greg's an expert on de-escalation tactics in crisis situations, which is the reason we're all still alive and none of the hostages were harmed. I married him for his negotiation skills. He's the most reasonable, patient man I've ever met. Mary Lou straightened her dress. Who was the hostage? Depends who's asking. Mel picked up a leaflet from the counter and then put it back. I finished that thriller you recommended. It was good. Although Greg tells me there is no way they could have discovered all that from a corpse that old. That's what you talk about over dinner? Corpses? Romantic. I guess you've run out of things to talk about after all these years. We're keeping it real. Mel grinned. And we can't flirt or talk sexy with Eden there. Although, now that I think of it, that's a perfect way to clear the room. She filed that idea away for later use, and Mary Lou shook her head. He's a keeper, that's for sure. The community is lucky to have him looking out for us, and so are you. I know. Mel glanced at the shelves. So, what do I read next? What have you got for me? Something better than fiction. Mary Lou leaned closer, a reliable sign that she was about to impart a priceless nugget of gossip. Because she didn't have anywhere to be for the next hour, Melanie leaned in, although why they were whispering she had no idea. There were three other people browsing the shelves, all of them tourists, who weren't likely to be the slightest bit interested in the antics of the locals. Is this about Mrs. Highgate's poodle? Because I already heard all about it. The much-pampered pooch had escaped the day before and dug up all the neighbor's newly planted begonias, the neighbor being Edna Casey. That little adventure had resulted in a visit from the police. Mel had heard about it from Greg, who had taken the call before breakfast. This is bigger than Mrs. Highgate's poodle. Don't you watch the news? Mary Lou beamed at the tourist, hovering behind Melanie. How can I help you? I'll take these two, thank you. The woman handed over two paperbacks. News? Melanie waited, foot tapping, while Mary Lou rang up the purchases and made small talk about the weather and the various attractions that the woman should see while she was in town. And by the way, had she read the next three books in the series she was buying? As a result of the exchange, the woman left the store carrying five books rather than the two she'd originally intended to purchase, and Mel glanced at her friend in admiration. Choose two, get sold three more? It's a solid sales strategy and a guaranteed way to stay in business. Mary Lou leaned forward again. Have you really not seen the news this morning? I told you, I was handling a major domestic incident. Mel grabbed a thriller from the shelf closest to the desk. How about this one? Any good? Yes, don't you watch TV? The news creates tension. I've been listening to Mozart. Supposed to be good for stress levels. I'm the mother of a teenager. My stress levels are always high, without making things worse. I doubt even Mozart is going to crack it, but I'm willing to give it a try if he is. If that fails, I'm probably turning to alcohol. Mel flipped the book over and read the back. She took her time, because she knew Mary Lou was burning to share whatever news Mel had missed, and she didn't see why she shouldn't have a little fun once in a while. So, what's happening? Cliff Whitman? Mel's good mood drained away. She slapped the book down on the counter. What about Cliff Whitman? Mary Lou drew her finger across her throat, and Mel frowned, confused. He had an accident with one of his own kitchen knives? Someone slit his throat? It wouldn't have surprised her. If she'd been married to Cliff, she would have murdered him before they reached their first anniversary. She would have tossed him into the ocean where, no doubt, his body would have sunk without trace, dragged to the bottom by the weight of his ego. Greg, steady, responsible, and unflappable at all times, would have pointed out that there were different sides to a person, but the only side of Cliff Whitman that Mel wanted to see was the back of him.
Not his throat. Mary Lou was eager to share the details. But he's dead. I guess that's what happens when you get into your flashy sports car. Such a cliche for a man of his age, and show off in the Hollywood Hills. Dead.
Mel felt a twinge of guilt. She'd been maligning a dead guy, which made her a little uncomfortable. On the other hand, she hadn't known he was dead when she maligned him. And also, this was Cliff Whitman. It was hard to have generous thoughts about someone who had destroyed the relationship of two people she loved. She heaped most of the blame on Cliff and ruined their perfect unit of four. And yes, she was emotionally involved because one of those people had been her best friend and the other her brother. And yes, 2 decades had passed, but Mel hadn't forgotten. But still.
Dead how? He crashed? Did Nate know? Had he heard?
Car went off into a ravine and get this. Mary Lou lowered her voice, which somehow made it even louder. He had a woman with him. Mel's stomach dropped as if she'd been pushed into the ravine with him.
Joanna. No.
She couldn't breathe. The sense of loss was crushing. And then came the guilt. Guilt that she hadn't tried harder to mend the rift while she'd had the chance.
Mel, you're white as paper. Sit down. Don't you pass out on my floor.
Mary Lou fussed over her, pulled out a chair.
Are you sick? What's wrong?
Joanna. Mel thumped onto the chair and managed to choke out the word.
It's just a shock, that's all. I can't believe she's gone.
Gone? Mary Lou was looking at her strangely.
She hasn't gone anywhere. Are you thinking it wasn't Joanna in the car?
You,
what?
Mel grasped the seat of the chair.
Why did you tell me it was?
I didn't. I said he had a woman in the car. No one knows who, but it wasn't Joanna. Mary Lou patted her shoulder.
Sorry to give you a fright. The news report said unknown woman. She's been taken to the hospital. No more details have been released.
Unknown woman. Still recovering from the shock of thinking Joanna was dead, Mel pushed her hair out of her eyes and tried to imagine what she'd do if Greg was speeding around picking up unknown women.
Joanna isn't a girl. She's 40 this year.
How had that happened? It seemed only yesterday they were blowing out 14 candles on a cake.
I've made a wish.
Mel hadn't asked what the wish was. She hadn't needed to. They'd been at that stage of their friendship where they'd known every single thing about each other.
I still remember the day she set fire to the kitchen in the Surf Cafe and put your brother in the hospital. Hard to forget a sight like that.
Mel hadn't forgotten it either. Flashing blue lights, her mother crying, Joanna crying too, tears smearing soot across her cheeks.
She didn't burn the place on purpose, Mary Lou. It was an accident. She was cooking a romantic meal for Nate. She was flaming the pancakes, and there was just a little too much flame.
Mary Lou shook her head.
Your brother was lucky he didn't lose more than his eyebrows. Oh, those two were inseparable. I was shocked when they broke up and she left town so suddenly. Felt sorry for him. I pictured them together forever, you know.
Mel did know, because she'd pictured the same thing. It had been a sharp and painful lesson that life didn't always turn out the way you thought it would.
Our history. Couldn't believe she went off with that chef when she'd only known him 5 minutes. Although she was such a terrible cook, maybe it wasn't such a bad choice. That girl would have starved or blown herself up if she'd been left to feed herself. Still, she certainly got more than she bargained for with Cliff Whitman.
That was true. How had Joanna put up with it? The girl Mel had grown up with had been loyal and loving. Yes, trouble had followed her around like a puppy, but that wasn't all Joanna's fault. And she did plenty of good things alongside the bad. She never forgot a birthday. She baked cookies.